It will be about services, and it will be about trying to find work. And speaking of, if you like that segue, services and trying to find work, there was last week the 8th annual Connectra Expo and Job Fair. And you remember we spoke with Neil Matheson from Connectra, which is one of the six, is it, Sam Sullivan foundations that are all part of the disability group, doing excellent work. Well, you know what? I wanted to call Neil back. He couldn't make it into the studio to find out how it went. So I gave him a call yesterday, and we had a great talk. It goes on for about 19 minutes, and you'll hear Neil talking about what actually happened, a little bit of history at the expo, then what actually happened at it, what happened when they were there, and then we get into services about employment and housing and all of that sort of good stuff. So here is Neil Matheson from Connectra. So good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
Maybe you should remind our listeners about Connectra, who you are, Neil Matheson, and what you do there.
Well, Connectra is part of the Disability Foundation and was started by Sam Sullivan, the MLA Sam Sullivan. And it's one of the six societies, and we just last week had our annual Abilities Expo there. And
what does Connectra do as a society?
Well, basically, it's in the name. I always tell everybody it's in the name where we basically connect people up with that have disabilities, and we put on workshops every couple of months, and they can be different themes. Like, for example, during winter months, we might highlight the Disabled Skiing Association. I actually know it's not called that anymore. It's called something else. They changed their name. Mm-hmm. But we'll highlight certain events during the year and do little workshops and things like that. And
so Connectra is about communications, bringing people together, getting them out of the house?
Exactly. That's a big part of what Connectra is. And for the last about 5 years, part of what Connectra has done is we've offered a employment program as well. And it kind of ties in well with that because it's all about connecting people up with work, and we also try to connect up with other employment agencies as well, and share, you know, try to cross pollinate and share between agencies. So that's why I say the Connectra is in the name, where we try to connect different agencies together and people together.
Well, fair enough. That's really important to do. The Connectra Expo and Job Fair was in part, I think, all about employment. It was about services that were available, but I think part of that is knowing those services helps you get employment.
Exactly.
You want to talk about what happened at the job fair? How it went?
It went pretty good. I mean, every year it actually gets a little bit better. I always find that, like I said, I think this year was the 8th year it's been going on, and every year there's a little bit more gloss added to it, but one of the things that I mentioned on last week's show is we talked about the idea that the disability community always seems kind of small. Like, that was one of the comments that I made. Supposedly there's thousands of people with disability in the province, right? But mm-hmm. It always seems that the disability community is always smaller than the ones that are active, and the movers and shakers are it's always the same people that you're running into. And that's kind of the case with the Disability Expo. You kind of wish you'd always see more people and new people, but it typically is the same people, and that's kind of disappointing. Like, there's always a little bit of more people, but typically it's always this kind of the same crowd. So, I mean, going forward, I would love to see it kind of blow up and get bigger and have a bigger sense of the bigger community of disabled people. But
well, I hear you. Let me suggest, just to be provocative, that say if you're a First Nations person, you got a community. There's history. You're proud of it. You're involved. If you're African Canadian, you maybe have a community, various communities. Well, you know what? If you have a disability, first of all, it isn't necessarily something you're proud of. It's got no history necessarily that's positive. The sole connection among, say, people who have multiple sclerosis or muscular dystrophy or spina bifida or who are blind or deaf is that they have those conditions, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there are a wide variety of people with a wide variety of opinions and backgrounds and whatever. I'm not surprised that you tend to see similar people each time because those are the people who are motivated. Who would see a benefit, who want to come out and meet people. But there are then those people, say, who are deaf, spend $6,000 for two hearing aids, try them for a week, and then put them in a drawer.
Mm-hmm.
These, I think, are complex issues, and I was hoping maybe today you might want to talk a little bit about that because it relates to, well, how you do reach people, how you do motivate them, how you do build a community, which I think there's some like 15-20% of the population in BC has a disability of one kind or another. That's a heck of a lot of people.
Exactly. And actually, that was one of the closing statements I tried to make again last week, is that I believe the change really has to start from the top, which means, you know, our government. And as I was saying last week, like, I like to frame it as a sort of a three-pillar approach where I believe government really understands how to make environments inclusive, like building ramps and building accessible playgrounds and things like that. So that's, say, pillar one, right? And
mm-hmm.
then you have pillar two is offering programs like the employment programs that we offer and job subsidy programs and all that kind of stuff. So that's pillar two, right? And so the only pillar that I believe that government is not understanding right now, and I don't really know how to say it other than to say that I believe that government doesn't understand how difficult it is to have a disability. And that's a really important pillar to understand for the people in power, is that, yes, you can give somebody a ramp or you can give them an accessible playground and you can give them a job, all these programs, and that's great. That's really great, but you still have to understand how difficult it is for the average person with a lifelong disability to function, right? Because it's so hard.
Let me give you an example. I know of a woman, we had this on the show, I think, about a year ago. She had to go out to UBC, took a bus out there. The bus was accessible. She got off the bus and then discovered there were no curb cuts. She was in a wheelchair. She could not get off the block.
Right.
She literally had to take another bus and go somewhere else. Something as simple as even getting outside your wherever you live, your house, your apartment, and then getting off the block can be very difficult. The co-host on our show, Muslim Rasuli, is legally blind and deaf. He can see, not in the center of his sight, but the periphery, some shapes and colors. Well, when it snows and it's all white outside, it's useless to him. He just can't make his way, even with a white cane.
Right.
He's at real risk of tripping and falling. So there's some very fundamental things responding to your pillar one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, of course, not including buildings, which may be accessible but not have fully accessible washrooms or properly accessible elevators. A lot of that's sort of being done in the new buildings. But again, I just wanted to respond that it's a lot harder than a person without a challenge would think just to get around.
Oh, for sure. And I always tell people, too, it's expensive having a disability, too. There's, when I was married and my wife is a teacher, right, and a teacher at elementary school. And so she needed a van to make sure that she was, on time for work and things like that. And but an accessible van, like even a used van, was like $30,000 at the time when we bought it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything costs way more money, like when you're disabled. I have to buy crutches I've paid out of pocket for a mobility scooter a couple times and things like that. And there's lots of things that are covered under the ministry, but there's lots of the things that aren't, too.
But just to interrupt, just to respond again, even if you have stuff like the van, it may not do any good. We've followed a fellow named Anthony Brills on the show. He has a rare genetic condition where his muscle cells don't work right, so he needs a power chair and a ventilator. He's in his first year now at Douglas College. Well, when it snowed fairly heavily, he couldn't, if he even could get to his van, the van couldn't get around.
Right.
And at Douglas College, which is on a fairly steep incline, a hill in New Westminster, that's the campus he goes to, he had real problems. At one point, his wheelchair, the back, had to be kept in a fixed upright position, and it was very dangerous for him until that got fixed. So, in fact, this year, he had to cancel his second winter semester.
Wow.
Partly because of issues about simply being able to make it regularly and on time. And
yeah,
partly because he, like you're saying, he deals with budget issues. We have followed him because since he was starting 18 and turning 19, and I wanted to deal with that whole change from being a minor to an adult, where as a minor here in BC, you have to negotiate with the government what your adult health care will be.
Right, yeah.
Which inevitably is less. So we followed Anthony regularly. He has graduated high school, and he did go through a semester at Douglas. He's now looking at online courses. But just to illustrate, right, he's a smart guy. But there are simple physical issues that prevent him getting around. And, of course, when you mention budget, I know of someone who's got muscular dystrophy, and increasingly it's difficult for him to do things for himself. So now he has aides who have to serve him lunch. He can't really handle a fork himself anymore. Well, he had to figure out in his budget which days he could afford to eat lunch, because
oh, wow,
he could afford to have it. I mean, it comes down to issues like that, and this has gone on for a very long time. It's gone on through all the previous governments with all the previous parties. I'm sympathetic to the current government, but in the end, right now, it's hard to say they've done any better so far, because talk is cheap and actions are what count.
Yeah.
So I'll be the one to say it. You don't have to, but I'm concerned that the benefits, the social allowance benefits, haven't really gone up to even match the cost of inflation over 10 years.
Yeah, and even things like what we were talking about last week about the bus pass and about the Compass Fare Gates. You know, initially those, while they still are actually, they still are inaccessible for people that don't have the range of motion right in their hands. But they are changing them, of course. We've heard that they're changing them. But the point is, I mean, those new gates, they should have never have been installed to begin with, right?
Yep.
And you know, that's just, it just shows a kind of a real lack of respect for people with disabilities, and that's the part that I don't like is you know, like leadership has to come from, leadership and change has to come from the, like I said, the government, and if the government doesn't respect people with disabilities, it makes it hard for people with disabilities, and I just really think that the leadership has to come from government to really make some profound changes to prove to people in the disability community that yes, we care, you know, yes, we're listening, and yes, we're prepared to have you you know, speak up as advocates and you know, make the change and move the needle, you know, and make things better for people. Well, you can have, the thing is you can have advisory committees and you can have poverty reduction plans, but if you don't follow them, like if you put them in place, but then you decide, mm-hmm. you know what, we're going to have these consultations and have these advisory steering committees and things like that, but if you don't follow through with them, then they're useless, right? So you've got to follow through with it too.
Clearly there's tons to talk about. And it would be great to translate that talk for our listeners into action. If you had a recommendation for our listeners, apart from reminding them what the Connector website is, for example, what would be a first step you think someone should take?
Well, you know what? I'm part of, I don't know if you know of this group. It's pretty popular now. It's got 12,000 members in it. It's a Facebook page. It's called the BC Disability Caucus, and I'm part of that. I'm a administrator, and I've submitted some articles. I've written some articles for them, and they're really good. And they basically are, it's a Facebook page, and it's all just volunteer driven. It's just a few people that have put together this page, and now, like I said, it has over 12,000. People that frequent it, and it's one of these pages that kind of just posts different articles from around the internet that highlight disability advocacy, or people can contribute their own articles. Like I said, I've written some articles for them, and it's one of those places that brings everybody together and helps to push the needle, and hopefully help formulate and change policy going forward too, right? Like they're actually trying to come up with a class action suit to for example the clawbacks of CPP, which is what I'm dealing with. Like, since my wife died, my CPP is not is seen as unearned income, right? So they can just deduct it.
It's clawed back. Yeah.
It's clawed back. That it's not considered earned, so they just claw it back, which is silly. I mean, like, you know, I still have a disability, right? Like, my disability hasn't changed, and now I'm also a widower, and they treat it like it's a good thing somehow. Like, I'm somehow in a better position, so now they can take away the money that's supposed to support my disability. They're saying, well, now that you have all this money from your dead wife, you know, you're well off now, so we can subtract all this money from your PWD, which is just perverse. Like,
it is.
You know, you don't kick somebody when they're down and say, okay, that's fair. You know, we'll take some money away and then we'll call that fair.
Apparently you do that. Apparently,
Apparently you do. But I mean, it doesn't make sense to me at all. And this is the point. I've said this in repeated emails for the last 4 years. Is, you know, the biggest thing for me too is it's a provincial decision, because on the federal level, of course, the federal government gives me the money. Like, they sign over the checks to me, so I get the money. So it's a provincial decision to then claw back the equal amount from my PWD. And for the life of me, I don't understand how the provincial government can come in and supersede a federal like a federal jurisdiction and say that the provincial government has rights over federal jurisdiction to say, you know, what we're gonna make that non-void. Survivor's pension non-void for you now. It doesn't make sense why they would do that and call that fair policy.
Well, it sure doesn't sound fair to me either, Neil. That was Neil Matheson doing some, you know, personal opinionating, which I totally agree with, by the way. He's with Connectra, and you can find Connectra, C-O-N-N-E-C-T-R-A, online, possibly at Connectra.ca. I do not have that in front of me right now, as you know, except for Kerry.